with Amy Grile, who is with the Kenosha Community Foundation. And we'll be talking about a number of different issues related to their good work in the community. Join us for Monday's morning show beginning just after 8.
Hi, I'm Dave McGrath. Join me for the all-new Saturday Noon Tunes with local musicians this Saturday morning at 10 o'clock on WGTD HD.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that focuses on the concerns in the Tri-County area. It's hosted by Jane Herring, Marcia Connett, Joan Rory, and Ron Purty. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 32-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's host.
Hello and welcome to Community Matters today. I'm Jane Herring, and we are going to be talking about a society's assets and learning more about what it provides, but it's very exciting because they are celebrating their 50th year. And I realized when I first was exposed to Society's Assets, you'd only been in business for 10 years, maybe less. So I'm excited to learn more about how things have changed over those decades and how you're supporting people. So we'll be talking with Carl Kopp, who is the executive director, Pauline Lorenz, who is the Director of Independent Living Services, and Donna Manerick, who is the Marketing and Development Director. So I always like to begin with, because I know I always think I know what you do, but let's talk about what it is Society's Assets provides.
Sure. Society Assets, when you think of us, we're a center for independent living, but we're a nonprofit, non-residential. So we help individuals with disabilities live their best life. So think of us as a resource for people with disabilities, any age, any disability. And we've been around since 1974.
Which is fascinating. And now that I think about it, it was 1980 when I first was exposed. So you were really new and also very, still at that point, very active. And there are so many services that you provide, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. But why was this formed back then in 74? What was triggering the creation of this organization?
Sure. Yeah, there was a movement to help people with disabilities live a better life. And for Society Assets, Donna is our historian, but you know, it was a local project that came out. There was a gentleman from Racine who had an accident, and there was a lot of liabilities exposed in the community about what we should do. And as he aged, he ended up forming Society Assets in roughly 1972. Then we incorporated in 1974. But it really started out as something simple as curb cuts. We wanted people to navigate in our community and be as independent as possible. And if you can't go from A to B without going over speed bumps, we got to address that. So that was the simplicity of it, is just being an advocacy agency back in the 1970s. And then what happened is, at the federal level, there was a civil rights movement, and it's about what can we do nationwide to help all the states help people with disabilities. So in Wisconsin, there's 8 of us that came about in the 1970s. And then through some federal money, there's roughly 400 of Centers for Independent Living. We all have nonprofit boards. At least half of them have a disability, so we all have our own voice in the community. So it started with some federal funding, then went to some state funding. So it's been an exciting ride in the last 50 years.
I do want to talk a little bit later about funding and what it's like right now, how that gets balanced, but those are interesting origins, the whole curb cut thing. I mean, it's hard to believe that back in the 70s, there were no curb cuts. You're hard to even remember those days. But how has the organization grown? I mean, did you have just a few staff people at the beginning? Did you have any staff people?
Well, we started out as an independent living center, so our focus was our 5 core services, and Pauline can share more about that. Now, we have other auxiliary services, but from the advocacy, we use those funds to program with our staff to focus on 5 core services. So I'll let Pauline explain a little bit more about that.
Okay, yeah, our independent living center, we are focusing on people coming to us and identifying their goals to how to stay mostly independent in the community as much as possible, so we can assist them with advocating for themselves, you know, kind of navigating red tape in whatever section of life that they need it, school, work, home. We do systems advocacy, so we kind of talk to legislators or encourage consumers to talk to their legislators to support funding and bills that would impact them. And we also do a lot of peer support. So like Carl said, 51% of our staff are people with disabilities, so we're more relatable than as just a, you know, case manager style person. We are a peer more, and we work with the person to, you know, just walk through their goals and set up a timeline, and it's all consumer driven. So then we do information referral because there's a lot of resources in the community that people do not know about or do not know how to access. And some of it might require filling out forms or talking to people. And if they are unable to, you know, write for themselves or see print, then we can help them navigate that. And then we do a lot of independent living skills training. So, you know, how to, you know, manage your caregivers, how to manage, you know, your funding, how to learn job skills or navigating the community successfully. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
One of the things that crossed my mind there is talking about, you talk about resources, but there's also adaptive technologies that people really don't seem to have any idea about. And how do you, is that something you also do, is talk about that?
Sure. We receive funding through the WISTEC program. That is federal funds that come to each state to provide a one-on-one demonstration of assistive technology. Sometimes we lend it out, but it's high-tech stuff that is not covered by insurance generally. That's things that, you know, might help a blind person read or use their computer independently. And it's very expensive. And so we want people to try it before they buy it. If it's not going to work for them, we don't want them to be out $5,000. So we get funding to buy these items. And then we meet with people. And we may tell them about something they had no idea was on the market. Or they may call us and say, hey, do you have this? I want to try it out before I buy it. And so we try to do that as much as we can. The funding's limited, so we try to buy things that are most relevant to people in our community.
I'm going to take a step back because I don't think I mentioned that Society's Assets, I think you are physically located in Racine County. Is that true? But you've got offices where? Who do you represent geographically?
Sure. So in Wisconsin, there's 72 counties. So five of the counties, based on our federal mandate, is the areas we serve. So we have Jefferson, Kenosha, Walworth, Rock, and Racine counties. So
okay,
those are, of the 72, those are our five areas. So in some of those, we do have brick and mortar operations, but a lot of our staff set up offices remotely in other areas of those Jefferson counties and whatnot. So our physical office right now we have is in Racine. We have one in Kenosha, and they have one in Elkhorn. But again, our staff also establish through partnerships other places for office hours in those five counties.
Oh, so it, probably some other agency, cooperative agency, would set
a
up
library,
an office.
Maybe.
Yeah,
yeah. Uh-huh.
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah, I realize I hadn't really talked about that, and actually you added two counties to that more than I thought. That's a lot. Having both Rock and Jefferson, we at Gateway are used to the Racine-Kenosha-Walworth triad, but okay, that makes it even more challenging. I really hate getting into funding right away, but that's kind of a logical transition, is where the money comes from to support the agency and its programs. I'm looking at you, Carl. I would assume that's your daily question as well.
Yeah, so it's nice we get some federal funding. We get some state funding. We also get some private donations. We have some county funding. So we have a funding mix of various resources. For our IL, Pauline talked about some life skills. So what's nice is we get some money for that core service, but we have some additional life skills that we can do a fee for service. And for the individual disability, a lot of it gets reimbursed through another funding source. So there's no out-of-pocket expense for the people with disabilities. So there's probably 20, 30 different funding mechanisms to allow us to provide with our nonprofit services.
Having worked with nonprofit budgets and educational budgets, wow, that must look really interesting on paper. Congratulations for being able to balance that and keep it going. To what degree do you depend on independent donations? Because I know that's the hardest, in a way, to come by.
Yeah, that's something that's, you talk about the future, that's what we're looking into, is more okay. philanthropy. Yeah, so.
All right.
And it's a tricky situation because of the money we receive, we're not allowed to do, for instance, lobbying. We're not allowed to do fundraising. So there is restrictions with some of the grants we receive at the federal and at the state level. So we do have some other funding, which is private pay, which allows us to reallocate some staff time to venture into some of those other revenue streams. And philanthropy is one of them we're looking to do, especially coming off our 50th year right now, is we realize the future, because of sometimes the federal and state's been stagnant for the last 20 years, we haven't had an increase or a bump in our funding. So we realize we have to roll around into the philanthropy market for the next 50 years if we're going to really aggressively help. So for instance, in Wisconsin, we're roughly under 6 million people. One out of four have a disability. So wow. If you look at the last 20 years, we haven't had any kind of a bump in our contracts. You're talking a 10% increase of more people with disabilities, yet there's been flat funding for our core services. So that's where we realize we really have to get into the philanthropy end of it.
And when you said no fundraising, can you talk about the difference between fundraising and philanthropy?
Sure. So for instance, with my time, we all fill out timesheets. So what's nice about it is because of our state grants, they're saying you can't do fundraising. So what we have to do is be very selective and make sure that we have the resources that pays for Donna's salary, my salary, or Pauline's salary that doesn't conflict with core services. Because the state really wants to say this is for helping people with disabilities versus raising money. So we'll call it resource development. So sure. Under resources, we can get into for-profit ventures and use the surplus from that to pay for our nonprofit mission, and philanthropy is one of them. So we do, for instance,
Got
we go
it.
After grants. Pauline referenced WizTech. So mm-hmm. We go out for outside funding and say, here's $10,000 to buy additional AT equipment for our resource centers, which is nice. So we do have a team of grant writing and whatnot, but not one person is dedicated because of the funding mix.
Totally understandable and very interesting to try to navigate from inside to make sure that you're not in violation, because I know you care very much about the publics you take care of, and you don't want that work to be interrupted. And I think it's time to go back to talking about some of those services, because I keep going off on all these administrative lines. So what about highlights over the last 50 years? You are celebrating your anniversary, and you've had a lot of exciting times. Donna.
Hi. The 50th anniversary celebration kind of kicked off this year, and we're going to stretch it out till next June. Mm-hmm. This year it kicked off with a fundraiser for college scholarships for students with disabilities. That was our Dollars for Scholars event, and it'll wrap up again next year with the same one. In between there, we're trying to have more visibility in the community, so we've been going to the county fairs and setting up a booth wherever we can find a spot to work with another organization. And we've done that in Rock County and Kenosha County. Let's see, one other county too. Walworth County. So three out of the five counties have had the experience with the county fair. We're expecting to have an open house at the with the Chamber of Commerce in Racine for our newly refreshed office space later this fall. There's some other things coming up too. Some things that we can involve our board and volunteers and staff members at. things like a sip and paint party, a get together, you know, everybody kind of just mingling and talking and kind of celebrating at that point. We've put on the list that we'd like to secure some media interviews, and actually there's one going on right now.
Yay.
So that's pretty neat. We have a youth art contest, which we've done for 25 years, and
oh, wow.
It'll have a little bit of a 50th anniversary flair to that as well. The theme for that one is Everyone Can, and it's kindergarten mm-hmm. through 12th grade students that are drawing, painting, using markers, to get that message across. What does it mean to them to say that everyone can?
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. We have the art displayed in the office, and we look forward to doing it again with the winners from this year's contest.
Great.
Let's see. We were hoping to go in the spring again to keep momentum going to some of the farmers markets, either with a booth, just an information booth, or a booth that would maybe sell something as a fundraiser, a little different way to do it. Those are some of the fun things that are coming up.
Donna, you've been with the organization a long time,
mm-hmm.
and what? Tell me how many years?
I would be 29.
So obviously you've seen changes in terms of probably staffing, types of programming, maybe the focus of the organization. Can you mm-hmm. just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I think the focus has always been the same. It's always been, you know, when somebody calls asking how we can help them reach their goals to be more independent. Sometimes it's somebody calling and telling us that we should have a booth at a thing going on, and a lot of people with disabilities will be there. So those things have kind of stayed the same. But there's some memorable times that I remember a gentleman who has cerebral palsy, and he used a wheelchair, and he had never been able to vote. And he called, or actually I think his sister called, and said, you know, could you help him? And so one of the independent living coordinators said, of course. And they found out where his polling site was and checked it out for accessibility, found out it wasn't accessible, which mm-hmm. might have been one of the reasons that he couldn't do this. This was probably 20 years ago. So they advocated on his behalf, and he was able to vote for the first time at age 72.
Oh, my gosh.
And those are the kind of stories, you know, that we probably have books and books full of them, you know, or files and files. But that was one of them. And then one other one that stands out is our anniversary year, 35th anniversary. So it's been 15 years. And we were going to have our fundraising walk. And that raised money for transportation for people with disabilities, because it's not always covered if they want to go somewhere other than the doctor.
Oh, yes.
Yep. So we kind of took a walk back in time. We started the walk at our current office now on Washington Avenue in Racine. And after doing some research, I found out we had four other locations in Racine over the years. So
oh,
we walked, yeah, backward in time toward High Street, which is on the north side of Racine, stopping along the way at those other places, and just to kind of commemorate it, get some photos, you know, just say, hey, this is
nice.
Where we were, and this is where we came from. So those are a couple of things that were very memorable. What else can I tell you?
Well, I'm always interested in technology, I'll have to admit that. And when I think about what technology in general was like in the 70s and 80s, it doesn't resemble what we have now. So I'd be real interested in hearing from some of you. You mentioned with voting, but there's probably a ton of things that have cropped up as being useful.
Yeah, I would say that's very true. It's all brand new and changing rapidly. As everybody knows, your cell phone's outdated within a year or two.
Yeah.
So, but now, you know, people with low vision and blindness have cell phones that can talk to them, and they can speak what they want to text or speak the person they want to call. And those are built-in features on cell phones now. And a lot of people don't know how to access that, or they don't even know it's there to get it turned on. So we have staff that are familiar with that or become familiar with it, and try to enable the person to use the technology they already own, which is, you know, what they own.
That's
so they don't have
nice.
To buy it.
Yeah.
But computers have come a long way, too, with voice activation, voice reading what's on the screen. And then voice to text, you can talk to the computer and it'll, you know, type it in for you if you're unable to use the keyboard. There's adaptive keyboards if you do wish to type. And those are really, a lot of those are inexpensive. A lot of those are built into the computer nowadays in the software that comes with the computer. But there's some pieces that are very expensive, and they may have a funder who will purchase that for them, or the school, if they go to Gateway or such. They can use it, but they sometimes need help learning how to use it because they're pretty complicated pieces.
I would think.
Yes.
And just the awareness factor, like you were saying, they have their phones, have no idea that that could really help them. I think that would be the toughest thing for both relatives and friends, as well as the person who's directly impacted, is even knowing what question to ask about what might be available for them. Do you have sessions where you just kind of real blanket, you are going to talk about technologies to help different types of disabilities?
Sure. We have a low vision peer support group called Revitalize that meets monthly for several years now, and primarily for Kenosha consumers, but anybody is welcome. And they often, every meeting, will highlight a piece of technology for low vision. We have a grant also that we facilitate that is for the hearing impaired telephones or mobility impaired telephone use. And we can assist the person getting funding to offset the high price of the specialized phone equipment. And so we do a lot with that one-on-one, but we do presentations on that to make people aware that they might be eligible for that. But it's mostly person by person who comes to us, and they might say, hey, I really want to, you know, get an apartment or get into my apartment, and I don't know how to go about this, get some funding for a ramp or to move. And we just work with them and let them know what we know, what's on the market. So there's a lot of staff training ongoing to make sure we know what the latest products. There's some big expos in our area that we go to and see the things. Vehicle modifications is a huge expense, but it's the what people want is to be independent and drive themselves. But we can help them navigate that sometimes. And so that's rewarding when they can start driving on their own.
Oh, I'll bet. How do people find you? Do they, I think there's probably still people who don't know you exist. We're trying to change that a little bit. But is it referral? Is it just individuals calling?
The state website for DHS has all the information on independent living centers right there. We are under the same funding umbrella as the Aging and Disability Resource Centers. So that's all on that website for DHS. So we cross-refer people from one agency to the next because we kind of do different things. Like Carl said, we do all ages, and Aging and Disability Resource Center starts at 18. So sometimes a family who has a new child with a disability are, you know, just starting the process, and so we can kind of help them navigate and learn what's out there. We get referrals from a lot of the social service agencies, social workers at nursing homes, apartment complexes, and word of mouth, I'd say, is a big one too.
I would imagine. Donna, again, with history, as far as number of people served per year, and I don't know who is the keeper of the numbers, but currently, approximately how many people are directly served by your various services? Do you keep
account? Yeah. Roughly about a little over 3,000 a year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and it's that mix among our core services and some of our auxiliary services. So, you know, like under, like Pauline referenced, information referral, some of those can be quick transactions of information that can go on for days or weeks. Some of the core services, when we do goal setting, that can go on for months and months. Our staff really, they don't do it for them. They don't assist them. They really support them and find out what they want to do. So it depends on it. So it's really not a numbers game, but roughly 3,000, because some individuals we see longer than we see other people, depends on their needs. So we really focus on that person-centered services, and that dictates the number of people we serve, but roughly 3,000 a year.
Okay. So when you're saying 3,000 a year, quite a few of those 3,000 are people who are seen multiple times. So you're not double counting them or... That sounds negative, and I don't mean it that way.
Right,
but.
We call it unduplicated contacts.
Oh, yeah, and
but they have the census in Wisconsin kind of indicates how many people with disabilities live in each county.
Okay.
And so we target to reach at least like 2% of the population in each county. So it's easier in Kenosha and Racine because the cities, you know, are big and people are closer by. But our Jefferson County is very large and very rural. So we're working hard to try to get. Better represented in that area, but that's a Rock County's big city, Beloit and Janesville. So we got some big populated areas.
For sure. Do you find people being kind of surprised at what you offer when you do make an initial contact? Is it how do they react?
I would say people are surprised and they are grateful or very excited to get some assistance to navigate. We work a lot with the homeless population and people transitioning out of institutions. So we've had some good success in the last few years with Kenosha County by partnering with the Kenosha Housing Authority, having some assistance with the vouchers. We've gotten multiple people out of nursing homes because the barriers were kind of insurmountable for that person to do it on their own. People in nursing homes usually get a very small stipend every month out of their income. And if you have to replace your, birth certificate and you don't have a credit card and you're born out of state, you have to do that all online. So we were able to do that. Mm-hmm. We've had some great grants that we've gotten from local churches and organizations. And we can use that money to, replace the driver's license, replace the birth certificate, help them get a new Social Security card. Because without any of those things, you can't even set out and do an application for an apartment. So those are the legwork type of things that we try to do. But nursing home transitions is very rewarding. And the people are very excited to, after living in an institution for years and thinking that's where they're going to stay, even as a young person in their 40s, to be able to get an apartment on their own and, coordinate all the services they need to stay independent.
Well, and I wonder how you mentioned 2% of the disabled public is kind of your customer base right now. If you just hear that number, you think that's not much, yet you're dealing with 3,000 people a year. I guess I wonder what the barriers are to people not getting involved with you. Is it fear that they don't have the money? Is it ignorance? Is it that they don't reach out to anybody so those people can't refer you? I mean, just curious if you have a feel for that.
Everybody's unique. Their situation's unique. Some people, might have a past history with the organization where they're kind of sensitive to having, a professional involved. but generally, people are receptive because we're, they're not mandated to talk to us. So when they are with us, we know they want to be with us to work on their goals. I think that's encouraging and they're welcoming to the assistance. And if they usually come back, a couple of years later, they're like, I'm going to, pursue working now or I'm going to pursue education, and then they come back and ask for some assistance with that, too.
Which is super. You're introducing people to the possibilities and that they aren't stuck where they are in whatever box society or themselves have created for the person. What are the challenges of running an organization like this? Because already I can tell you offer a lot more one-on-one assistance than I was aware of. And I would think just staffing alone would be...
Well, Kenosha County specifically and most of our counties, housing is a huge challenge. And when somebody's unsheltered, they might have been homeless for a long time, that's a barrier because we don't have a lot of housing in Kenosha and it's very, very expensive. And Kenosha Housing Authority does a great job and offers some vouchers, but they're very competitive to acquire one of those vouchers.
Mm-hmm.
So the subsidized units that we have in Kenosha, you have to be on disability to apply to or a senior. And there's some people with a disability who are not on disability yet, so they usually staying with family or friends or homelessness until they can get on disability and apply to one of those apartments. But the apartment wait lists are extremely long as well. So I think that's the primary need when people call us, is we get a lot of people needing help with housing, because obviously our climate, you cannot be homeless through the winter. So that's discouraging for all of our staff to try to assist a person who may have, you know, had some bad rental history that's going to prevent them from getting a second chance. And sometimes landlords are really open to working with the consumer, knowing that they're working with us as, you know, helping them with their finances, helping them navigate their paperwork. So I'd say the staff gets frustrated with the lack of resources, but that's just across the board for everybody in the United States, I think.
And I would think, too, so many of the landlords who are typically on the assisted list, many of those homes are old and they are not accessible for wheelchair or, yeah I can see you, you both agree with that.
Yeah, I'm glad you, you know, think of that. And because we at Kenosha, the houses are all four or five stairs to get in. If you go downtown, they're the old style with our lakefront so close, our water table is pretty high.
Yep.
So it's the cheaper rent places are the older homes, and they're not accessible. The bathrooms are very small. The doorways are narrow. And it's very costly to put in a ramp. So we try to, you know, help them find some of the new apartments that are accessible with elevators and such. But if they're not subsidized, rent for a one bedroom is over $1,200. So it's impossible, because if you are on disability, it's usually not over much over $1,000 that you receive, and then you can't even do the rent. So,
Carl, from a staffing standpoint, you hear so many organizations struggling with finding appropriate staff. How has your experience been with Society's Assets?
Yeah, I think what's helped us is Pauline's hiring manager, so she has a staff under her. You know, I think what helps us is all the managers. We look for attitude, and then we'll train for aptitude. So if you don't have that college degree, that's not going to stop you from being a potential staff with us. And it's really about, the goal is to have staff that great attitude and they have empathy, because you really need to have empathy in this line of work. And you also have to have an exchange of openness. So Pauline's very good. She'll tell staff, you know, sometimes we have to allow the individuals we help to fail. You know, they have to go after a job just like any of us, and they don't get the job, but we have to prepare them for it, and we'll help them. So I think it's that open-mindedness. We're not going to put anyone in a box. I go back to the person-centered services. So that's the staff we look for, is, I don't want to use the word coach, but so they don't play the game for them, but they just give them resources to allow them to be successful as individuals. And so that's kind of what we look for. And again, when Pauline talked about peer support, it's nice if they do have some type of visible or non-visible disability, because we find that we're not going to take a staff person with Parkinson's, say you can only work with someone who has Parkinson's, but you still understand the frustrations and you need the assistive technology, you need the I can do this sort of a mindset. So I think that's what we look for when we hire people. So it's been nice when those come across. But, you know, right now with everyone, especially coming off COVID, everybody wants to work at home and do telehealth and whatnot. You know, we're really about FaceTime with individuals as much as possible. So it is challenging. Like I say, it is very challenging. But I think because of the attitude mindset we have, we've been very fortunate. We have a great crew working for us.
You have a lot of counties, too. Do you feel like you're fully staffed in all of those counties? Or is that, are you looking for more employees and full-time, part-time, as long as we've got the opportunity?
I think funding, what our core base funding is, we are staffed, but we are trying to increase our private pay or, you know, other funders. And as we grow those areas of our organization, we can add some staff. But right now we're pretty much fully staffed. We have one person that lives in Janesville, Rock County, and so she's trying to do some outreach. She's new. And then we have three people that live in Walworth County. I'd say we're about fully staffed, yeah.
Yeah, I know it's always staff versus money versus requests that come in from each area. I'm sure it's a balancing act of sorts. We were talking about each of those core services, and in the last 10 minutes or so, I'd like to dig a little bit deeper in some of them. Can you remind me the exact title of a couple of them?
So we have individual and systems advocacy.
Yeah, let's start with that one.
Yeah, so those are exciting and those are challenging. We are going to use some private funding that we had received from a gentleman to charter a bus to Madison in the spring. There's an advocacy day that is kind of arranged by the Survival Coalition. So we want to bring a group of consumers from our area there, and the transportation is the big barrier, especially even chartering a bus. They may only have two or three seats for a person using a wheelchair. So it's very, if we have five people and you have to rent two buses chartered to Madison all day, it's a very big hunk of our funding. But it's important for people to be in Madison and see the energy and meet their representatives and show that they have a voice and show that they are voters and taxpaying citizens of their community. So that one's exciting. Individual advocacy, there's red tape and everything, going to school or getting accepted at an apartment complex, or if they have problems at their apartment, we might help them at a meeting with the apartment complex manager to try to work out the problem. And just advocacy with funding. People sometimes get turned down for things from their funder, and we help them appeal those decisions to try to advocate for them and to help them voice their need. And that's often very successful.
What you're offering is pretty amazing. And I could see where people might think to themselves, I'm asking too much here to have them speak on my behalf. But that's kind of what you do, right? People should feel more comfortable with that.
I don't know if we speak on their behalf. We assist them in getting your voice heard.
Okay. Tell me the difference.
Well, obviously, the person, asking, it's most valuable to come from them. And they can, but sometimes they don't know who to call or where to start or how to navigate a letter to stand up for what they think would be, beneficial to them. And so, we can sit side by side. We've gone to court with people and sat by their side just as encouragement for them to help them understand what's going on. But obviously the person would be the one answering the questions.
Oh, sure. Okay, that does make sense.
Okay.
Next service.
Okay, information referral, which is that's just a generic, call and say, hey, I need to get a haircut and I can't leave my house. Are there, places or people that will come to my home? And we might have those resources on hand. Or, I'm having trouble paying for my electricity. What pieces of funding are out there for me and how do I apply? And so we might help them through the application process or get them in the right people. Peer support, I mentioned. We try to, be empathetic and based on our own life experience with either having a family member or having a disability ourselves, we can, say, I navigated this too. It's very difficult, but it can be done, and just encourage them that way. Transition services, transitioning out of an institution is very rewarding, but that a lot of people don't know or don't think they can have the opportunity to go back into the community once they had to leave their house because it was inaccessible or their apartment. And nursing homes aren't always motivated to help people move out because they're motivated to have people living at their nursing home. So we're kind of non-biased and we can, work for the consumer. We're not working for a funding source to let us know that we need to keep the budget in line, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked quite a bit about the core services, and it seems to me one of the overriding themes is you're helping people develop the confidence to kind of take charge of their lives and giving mm-hmm. them access to tools that allow them to do that.
Yeah, right? When working with the youth is very encouraging. We've done lots of classes of how to navigate employment or advocate at your school IEP. So they mm-hmm. might be at the IEP and be, you know, railroaded by the counselors or the teachers thinking they know what's best, but the student can voice what they feel would be beneficial. We can attend IEPs with the student, mm-hmm. and parents often will call us and say, you know, I have this IEP meeting. What should I be asking for? Because sometimes services are there, but if you don't ask for them specifically, they might not be offered or thought of by the staff. So it's like standing by a person's side, I guess, as an ally to voice what's needed to stay in the community.
So we've spent most of the interview talking about the services you provide now, a little bit of the history. Carl, I'd like to talk with you about the future. You gave us a hint, you know, philanthropy, in order to keep the organization alive and well, that's something that you're going to be trying to do more with. You said that's with large organizations. That's who you're going to be targeting a little bit?
Yeah, we have, I'll call it two fronts. So at the federal level, we want to, I mentioned there was 400 of us across the United States, 8 of us in Wisconsin, but we all have our own board of directors, so we make our own decisions. So we all get federal funding. So there is a movement, especially with elections coming up, is to do more for the 5 core services. It's called 5 for 5, $5 million for the 5 core services, spread among 400 organizations across the country that help people with disabilities. So that's one front. There's advocacy for that at the federal level. And then also for the state level, in Wisconsin, again, there's 8 of us who, there hasn't been an increase in state funding in 25 years. I mean, it's a quarter of a century, and
that's
yet the population, if you look, has grown to 500,000 in that 25 years, and if it's 1 out of 4, statistically, there's people out there, like you had referenced. How do you know about us? You know, you don't know until you need to know, because we don't have money to put on billboards or a lot of radio ads, so it's really an organic, you know, it's through referral, people who say, hey, did you read about Society Assets, or the other 7 of us, excuse me, in Wisconsin. So having said that, we realized we're going to rebrand ourselves. And I'll let Donna explain. So we had this name, Society Assets, and it was interesting how we came to that. But we're going to really try to come up with a name that says what we do. And I'll kind of turn it over to Donna about our future of what we're looking to do with our namesake.
Right. We got other people at the agency involved, the board members, staff. Everybody suggested a new potential name. I think we had a list of 80 different new names that we would consider. It's getting close to the finish line. We've narrowed it down, and I think the board will talk about it at the September board meeting, so down to the top 5. And from there, then all of our materials and maybe a little push about some of the things that we do in conjunction with the name change, so that would bring some more visibility to the agency. That's the plan.
That sounds excellent. And I think we could be talking through 2 programs about all the things that you do, and I appreciate you taking the time today. We have been talking about Society's Assets with Carl Kopp, who is the executive director, Pauline Lorenz, who is director of Independent Living Services, and Donna Manerick, who is the marketing and development director of Society's Assets. And I'm Jane Herring.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine.